wrapping everything up quickly. Our next speaker is David Brooks. I think it's safe to say he's one of the country's leading experts on water. He currently serves as senior advisor on freshwater issues at the Friends of the Earth Canada, and prior to that he served for a long time at the International Development Research Centre here in Canada as director or acting director for Environment and Natural Resources Management. He's had a long career dealing with water issues, and I believe he'll be looking at talking about a Canadian study dealing with full soft path methodology to specific economies and specific geographic settings, ones which looks at sustainability as a bottom line versus economic efficiency. So, David Brooks.
Thank you very much, Desiree. Tim, I have to take a slight exception to what you said. You started off saying that everything had been discussed about water, but you hadn't mentioned water soft paths. I don't think they've been mentioned before, so that's my topic. What on earth are water soft paths? Well, the short answer to that is they're a form of water management that puts its emphasis on resolving supply-demand problems by reducing demand rather than increasing supply. But we can get a little more sophisticated than that. It's no coincidence that the terms soft path, whether applied to energy or water or some other commodities, and sustainable development came up at the same time. We'd known for a long time, and it goes back, you know, environmental economics is not a new branch of economics. It goes back to the turn of the previous century. We've known for a long time that economic activities affect our environment. What we learned and really came home with the Brundtland Report was that what we do with our environment affects our economies. And I think this was best said by Margaret Atwood when she said, the economy is a wholly owned subsidiary of the environment. The problem with sustainable development, or a soft path, is you can't get there from here, and certainly not the way we're going. Conventional economic analysis has been superb at telling us how best to use resources in order to get the most out of them, how to allocate resources. It has generally failed in telling us how much of our resources we can use. And that's where soft paths step in. Soft energy paths, water soft paths, are respectively the energy and the water components of a sustainable society. And as such, they have three dimensions, one of which I'm going to emphasize, but all soft paths have three dimensions. First, they're a vision of a different kind of society, a society you want to move toward, and therefore a soft path, as the word implies, has a movement. It's much more a process than a product, or as I like to describe it, more a verb than a noun. Secondly, they are an analytic method. They're a way of looking at way you handle resources. And I would maintain it's a method that is just as rigorous as conventional cost-benefit analysis. And finally, they're a planning tool. They're a way for people making decisions to evaluate new investments, new policies, new development projects. Now, I'm going to shift at this point and talk mainly about the middle aspect, water soft paths as analysis, because that's what we've really been involved in. And I'm put a slide up. I'm not going to talk to that slide because I don't have enough time, but you can all multitask. After all, we're modern people, and I'll let you just go ahead and look at it while I go on and talk. Now, you do have to understand, of course, that the notion of efficiency or demand management in water is not new. Engineers and planners have always thought about how much water it takes to do something and whether we can be more efficient in our use of water. But as commonly used, that approach has two critical deficiencies. One, it's based on the same decision-making criteria as conventional economics, which means it does not take sustainability into account in either the water supply end or the waste disposal end. And secondly, as some of Karen Baker's work and Catherine Furlong's work done at the Center of Governance, It's mainly been used by water plants. Say, okay, we'll cut back a little bit, but we'll get the next supply project online pretty soon, and then you won't have to conserve anymore. Water soft pods don't do it that way. For water soft pods, sustainability is the bottom line, not economic efficiency. And this is how we build them from the start. Now, it did take, the soft water soft pods emerged from the soft energy path, which was created two decades earlier, and it took some adaptation to get it from energy to water. There are a lot of similarities, but many differences. And I'm happy to say that the Canadian studies were really the first done anywhere in the world where we took specific geographic areas, real physical, living, breathing economies or societies, and applied water soft path analysis to them. The results are available. We have them available in a brochure that looks like this, or I hope you will all go and brush out from here. You can get to the bookstore in just a few minutes, or after you listen to Bob Slater, of course, and you know, you can buy a copy of the book and hear about it here in much, much more detail, and also about some other countries that are experimenting with them. Let me go on to, see, what do I do to move this up now, sir? How do I move this?
This button right here.
Okay, just go down. That's where I want to end up. These are some of the results from our studies. And again, I'm not going to speak to this slide. I just want to make sure that you can see that some of the convinced. I just want to now generalize, go quickly to the kinds of results and generalize from some of these specifics to tell you what we learned. First, water soft path analysis is feasible. Yes, there are enormous statistical difficulties to overcome, and I guess what are called in the literature heroic assumptions, there are plenty of them. But so are they in conventional analysis. So yes, it is feasible to do soft path analyses on specific geographic areas, specific communities. Second, and more important, the potential savings that you can identify with water soft path analysis are significantly greater than those when you stick with a strict cost effectiveness. If that's your bottom line, which it is with demand management, your savings are highly constrained compared with what you get with soft path analysis. And moreover, because soft path analysis is inherently a long-term strategy, it won't tell you much, if anything, about what you should do next year or even the next 5 years. Because of that, it can allow for climate change, it can allow for redesigned institutions and changed values. Third, and probably most important, the water, as we look at the challenges, at what we need to do to overcome this, the real challenge is not technology. We can find the technologies where there are technological gaps. We can see ways around them. But it's really to create a shift in mentality from supply focus to demand focus. Water soft paths are designed from the beginning. You can't have a soft path unless it is sustainable. So ecological sustainability is built in. The analysis shows, what we did in these studies, that economic feasibility is also present, or you're close enough to it that you can ask those kinds of questions that were asked in the polls we heard about. Would you be willing to pay something more for this? And if the answer is yes, then these results are economically feasible. What we don't know yet, and what still remains to be tested, is whether water soft paths can be made politically attractive. We're trying it out. We have a couple of experiments going on. But the big question is, how do you move it from sustainability and feasibility to a politically attractive result? Thank you very much.